a Wednesday afternoon, 12:12 on this fall-like day. And Terry Savage is in the studio. You can read her columns. Follow her at terrysavage.com. Today, it is as if it is her birthday. The presents are all around her. Here she is staring at this major tax plan. So the president is on his way, I would assume, to Indiana. He will unveil his tax proposal, his tax cut proposal, in Indiana just a couple of hours from now. You've had an early look at it. What do you think?
All right. Let's specify that I rarely comment on politics. So I am going to look at this from an economic point of view. However, I might forgive a lot of the political stuff that's going on in Washington if they could get around to passing something like this proposal.
You like
and I
it.
Will tell you why. This is not, sadly, they've wasted all the political capital they had with the American people and on Capitol Hill, except maybe the Republicans in the Congress will, this is one of the bigger things they wanted to fight for, was not tax cuts for the rich so much as an economic plan and a tax program that could help the country grow. And that's my starting point, okay? So, you know, taxes don't have to be a political issue. You know, because we've talked about this before, who the biggest tax cutter of the 20th century was.
John F. Kennedy.
It was Kennedy. Well, you didn't give me people a chance to think about it. Everybody jumps to Reagan. But the Kennedy tax cuts passed in the early 60s were passed because Kennedy said, and I quote because I have the quote here, paradoxically, the way to increase tax revenues is to cut tax rates, said John F. Kennedy. He also said, a rising tide lifts all ships. So if you believe in the basic concept that people do better things and more productive things with their money than government does, I don't know who can disagree with that. I mean, beyond a certain level where we need to defend our country, we need to take care of the weakest and poorest, yes. But beyond a certain point, I think most people listening to the show would agree that people do better things, more rational things with their money than government does in terms of spending it. And that number, the next point is that if you work harder, it's because you work harder for your own money, not to pay the government.
Okay, I get all that.
So tax cuts will encourage harder work, more investment, and so forth.
Okay,
in general,
you made the case for
said
that.
But Kennedy,
let's talk about the meat of it. I want to talk about what's in
it.
Okay,
I'm happy to talk about specifics.
So they were going to cut the corporate tax rate to...
let's start right there. It's to 20%.
Okay.
It had widely been discussed. Maybe it would go to 15%. Of the 35 countries in the OECD, that's a developed world, America has by far the highest tax rate. This would bring us down to toward the lower end.
Okay, but we've also talked about what corporations pay actually as opposed to the rate. So
yes,
do you see in here...
This would still be... Watch this. The reason corporations, and no smart corporation, pays the full tax rate, and nobody out there just pays, as an individual, pays the statutory personal tax
sure,
rate without
right,
taking
right.
looking for deductions. So think of the money that corporations spend on tax planning, on strategies, on lobbying Congress for tax breaks. All of those things are what keep them from paying the statutory 35% rate. If you bring the rate down to 20%, not only is that lower than most corporations are paying today, leaving them more money with which we can talk about what they might do with it, not only is it bring the rate down, but it takes all these inefficiencies out of the government. All the lobbying, all the pressures, all the what's the use of contributing campaign money to a representative or congressperson if, in fact, you've already got a pretty darn low tax rate? Let's work on business.
I'm going to lead you through these. Okay, so they get
so that's
that cut.
Cutting the corporate tax rate.
Good to
Good
cut.
Idea.
Will they cut the deductions that allow them to pay so much less? I mean, will those loopholes be closed so that the 20% rate is a more real rate?
Okay, this was called a framework. Okay, and for sure... Although in the end it would cut lobbying expenses, right now you're going to see a huge crowd of highly paid lobbyists descend on Washington. We got to keep this loophole, that loophole, the other loophole. It'd be really interesting to see if Congress can resist that and close a bunch of the loopholes. immediately deduct, for instance, investments in plant and equipment would be a great thing. That's the first thing they do with the extra money they save.
Right. Incentivizes people, the companies bringing money back from overseas. How would that work?
Okay.
And we all agree that's a good thing, right? That should be happening.
Yeah. And even if they only bring, as in the past, they don't have to bring it all back. If they bring 20% of it back, there would be a tremendous return of capital to America. Let's have a quick discussion, because I already heard some people out there get their feathers ruffled and said, I don't like Terry Savage talking about cutting taxes for corporations. Let me ask you a question. What are the things that a corporation could do if it got a tax break? Okay, now it's got more money. The thing we'd like to think it would do would be, oh my goodness, now we have money to build that new plant, hire more people,
pay
stop
their workers
the layoffs,
more.
Pay the workers more, that kind of thing. But just suppose they're horrible, lousy people, like maybe some CEOs that we've seen in the headlines in recent days. So what do they do with it? Well, maybe they say, you know, our business isn't growing enough. Well, let's just give a dividend to shareholders. We've got this cash bonus, and that's been happening a lot. Now, shareholders get it. Shareholders are your retirement plan, your pension fund, your 401k, your S&P 500 index fund. So you get the money eventually, and what do you do with it? You want government telling you? No, you're going to go spend it. You're going to go on vacation. That all creates jobs and growth in America, because there's lots of people that would actually spend money.
I don't know. If I get that money, it looks to me like I'm going to be paying more taxes because they took away my property tax deduction.
All right, well, let's stay on the
Let's take a break. We need to take a break.
Okay.
And I want to talk about the individuals, too, because that's what most people listening, you know, will be impacted by. I understand your points about the economy.
Before you leave for this break, the point being that if you leave more money in the hands of corporations, let them bring it back from unproductive uses overseas, it's likely, one way or another, even if the CEO pays himself $18 million, he's going to invest it or spend it. But that's not the best use. But having the money here in the economy is better than having it parked overseas.
I agree with that. I hope that they would invest. But they haven't done it in the workers since the recovery, right? The wages haven't gone up. So the evidence
isn't
great.
This might be the turning point.
Maybe. Hope so. We're talking about the president's income tax overhaul proposal, or tax proposal, I should say, that he will unveil in Indiana just a couple of hours from now. And I want to try to get through a lot here.
Okay.
Okay. But here's a biggie. This is my biggest tax deduction, and I suspect it is for a lot of people listening. They want to get rid of your ability to write off your property taxes on your income tax.
That's and your state and your state income tax.
And your state income
and
tax.
And if you live in New York City, but how's New York City going to feel about
okay,
that?
Okay, you don't want to get political, but the fact is that this targets Democratic states. I mean, that has been written, high tax states that are Democratic, New York, Pennsylvania, California, Illinois. So there is that little whiff of politics here. But let's not even do
okay,
that. Let's
but
not do
let's
that.
Let's look at what look at what that's offset by. A lot more money is going to be taxed at 0%. They are talking about doubling the standard deduction, which is currently $6,000, to $12,000, just over $6,000, to $12,000 for individuals, $24,000 for married couples,
so they would,
meaning the first $24,000 of your income is completely tax-free.
So they would raise the lowest tax break a bit, but take a lot of people out of that by increasing the credit, right? Many fewer people would pay. They're proposing three tax
they're
brackets.
Gonna have, and then on
and
top
the lowest,
of that,
the
they would layer three tax brackets suggested in this plan to start at 12, 25, and 35%. So that cuts the top rate. It raises the bottom a little, but it makes it a lot easier for people who just take the standard exemption.
That's my point. The lowest one would go up, but most people wouldn't have to be affected by that because they would get
all that free money that's not taxed, $24,000 for a married couple. So the biggest, you're right, the biggest political football on this is this proposal that you can no longer deduct local and state taxes, which includes your property taxes. First of all, that would certainly impact the housing market.
Right.
All right. Because if you're live in Illinois and property taxes are surely going up and you can't even say, well, the government's paying a third of it or half of it, that certainly will impact the real estate market negatively. I couldn't agree more with that. One of the good things they are keeping, though, is the mortgage interest deduction and the charitable deduction. If you were having a completely flat tax with just three brackets and do it on a postcard, that would have been eliminated. But you will still be able to deduct your mortgage interest. You will still be able to deduct your charitable contributions.
Okay, but tell me again, if I don't pay $20,000 in property taxes, but I know people who do.
Oh, yeah, there are a lot of people that do.
And
you know what? $20,000 to them may be less significant than the deduction of $6,500 on a bungalow for a relatively low income person. However, I think and I haven't seen anyone do the math yet, but let's just take the person living in a Chicago bungalow who is having facing rising property taxes that won't be deductible. It's just possible, and I want to see someone do the math, that this $12,000 standard deduction for each if they're married would offset, more than offset,
well,
the
that's
lack
what
of
I'm
deductibility
asking.
Of $6,500, because you're only paying in that bracket, you were only paying maybe 10% to 15%
That's what I'm asking. I mean, if I'm giving to Peter to take from Paul, or robbing Peter to pay Paul, I mean, if it's an even swap, I'm okay with that. I could do that. But I'm a little leery of them dropping the tax rate for the richest Americans and then having me end up paying more because I lose that deduction.
Well, but they're dropping the tax rate mostly for the poorest Americans by giving the low-income Americans completely tax-free. But
I'm all for that. I'm talking about the richest Americans.
You've missed one big point about this, which is the greatest point that'll be debated, which is if you make the tax code simpler, fairer to most, and more easily accommodated, and you wipe out the money that corporations spend lobbying in Washington, and you encourage creation of growth and jobs through corporations having more than one, will they hire people, grow the economy, create better, higher-paying jobs for the people at that bottom end who aren't getting quite as good and obvious a tax break as the top? And will that lift the boats of all Americans?
I hope
John F. Kennedy said it would, and that's what his tax cuts did.
I wish people were watching this. I hope they are online, because we're both like so eager to go and make a point and a counterpoint. One of my concerns is, and again, I tend to be on board with this. You're the expert. I think you are making the assumption that once these corporations get these tax cuts, that they're going to be happy with the new stuff and not try to weasel out more. And I think they're going to spend those resources trying to figure out
how to pay zero, or how to pay only 19
instead
of 22.
Well, a lot of them do pay zero.
You know, the point I'm making is if they eliminate some of the loopholes and make it so straightforward, rational,
they're going to have more money to lobby for more loopholes.
Oh, gee,
how do you
I
argue
hope
that
not. That's
one, yeah.
Such a pessimistic thought. The real experience of our past, both in the Kennedy cuts and again in the Reagan cuts, is that you do get growth. Now, you have to stop and say, well, what will we do in the meantime when we aren't getting the revenues in until growth starts? And all I can say to you is, my gosh, we have a $20 trillion national debt. We got to do something different, because what we're doing now isn't working. We have a slow growth economy, too many people not earning good enough wages. And we need to shake this economy up. I'd be willing to believe, because of past history experiences, that cutting taxes would energize this economy and make the United States a tax haven for the rest of the world.
I'm with you. I know that we need to do something. I hope it all works out. And we'll see how it goes. I just hope something gets done.
Please, I hope so.
The Dow is up 17 points. See, I've got all my wires crossed trying to do a little something different. Frank Sennett is on a phone line, and he is from Crain Chicago Business. We talk about some of the stories that Crain's is covering in the news today and during the past week and next week as well. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, sir.
All right. So I'm looking here, and I see the mayor has named this commission with Oscar Munoz and Penny Pritzker and the CEO at Abbott as well. And I see there are 600 people on this commission in one form or another that will work to bring Amazon's second headquarters to Chicago. And I mean, I would think I got to 597, 598, and I still hadn't run across your name.
I think I'm a first alternate.
Is that right? So in the event that the first runner-up cannot perform the duties as Blue Ribbon Commissioner, you will step in.
That's right.
What is something like, so the mayor named this group today. They clearly will be lobbying and making their case. I don't know what a body of 600 people can do other than sort of, you know, look nice on a letterhead. What does a group like this do?
Well, I think, you know, in part it shows the level of commitment to Amazon. There's just, you know, strength in numbers kind of a thing. But Penny Pritzker, who's helping to head up this group, went to Seattle last week to check out Amazon's campus and learn more about the company. So she's out there doing the jet-setting diplomacy. And then, you know, other members of that committee are putting together their RFP. And we've got two big deadlines coming up. Today is the deadline for any real estate developer. You know, the mayor has set this deadline to tell the city, you know, if they're interested in bidding on this. And then we only have three weeks as a city to hit Amazon's deadline for the request for proposals. So, you know, I imagine a lot of those people are going to be pretty busy, you know, I don't know, proofreading PowerPoint slides.
Yeah, you know, I don't think so. I made it look like I'm not putting it down, because I know that that will be led by very active people. But I guess, you know, but when you get 600 people in a list, that's probably more sure of force than it is of actual actors. I know Penny Pritzker has been very involved. So this is all going to happen pretty, I mean, it's kind of like the Olympics. I think John Pletz writes about in Cranes that it has the feel like the Olympic bid, except it's sort of at hyper speed.
Yeah, everything's fast forward these days, and this is in that vein as well. You know, years and years to put together that failed Olympic bid, which I think everybody felt like we dodged a bullet on that. It was the best thing we ever lost out on.
I totally wanted us to have the Olympics. Are you kidding me? Come on, Frank, you've got adventure. Why wouldn't you want the Olympics?
Well, because I couldn't qualify for the speed walking team, as try as I might.
You would have time to train.
You know, I just think the financial burden might have outweighed the financial gain. But, yes, it would have been a spectacle that we could all remember. But the Cubs won the World Series, so what do we care, right?
Right. Well, you know, because, right, the city and state were going to be in lousy financial shape with or without the Olympics, so I say bring it on. And I have heard people complain a little bit about Amazon, the idea that it might not be all so great, that it could drive up the cost of housing, the cost of living in the city, and actually do some damage as well. There are people in the tech industry who say that they could suck a lot of energy out of the smaller tech companies. It seems to me like those are overcomable problems, but I guess they're the sort of things that have to be considered as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have an op-ed that ran recently in Cranes we were, showcasing some of the potential negatives. That included maybe they wouldn't be bringing 50,000 jobs here right away. Maybe there was a little PR spin in that. And, yeah, if the amount of people do come, real estate prices are going to go up for the rest of us, and a lot of people are going to be coming in. It's not going to just be all Chicago people that would be hired. So, there are definitely some catch-your-breath kind of things. And when you're in the heat of the moment, the three-week deadline sprint, maybe you set some of those aside, but I guess the money's on it being better if we get it than if we don't.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, okay, there might not be 50,000, so there's going to be 10,000. That's not too bad. I'll take 10,000 jobs.
And that's our old friend Tom Gimbel of LaSalle Street, by the way.
It is Gimbel. So it's exactly. Yeah, Gimbel said that on a show a couple weeks ago.
Okay,
so one of the sites, I think one of the sites that people thought about pretty quickly is this North Branch development along the Chicago River on the near north side. And what's the company that is involved in a lot of the development? Sterling Bay, right? They've purchased up a lot of the property. And the alderman there, Brian Hopkins, has had some issues with park space and whatnot. And now he sort of has thrown a wrench into the acquisition of some of this property, which could be key, if not to Amazon, certainly to the development of this area.
Yeah, so the whole key for Sterling Bay is to put all these parcels together and make this mega development. And as you say, the alderman put a hold on the $105 million sale that's pending on the city's 18-acre fleet facility management site along the north branch of the Chicago River. Those of us who go to the Hideout bar for various music events know that place very well. And what he's saying is that there's been a lack of transparency in the bidding process and that there actually is a higher bid out there. Shockingly, he thinks the city may be playing a little politics.
There is a higher bid out there, but it's not too unusual, right, for the city to go for a lower bid. Because I think Sterling Bay's turnaround period was quicker. They had fewer zoning restrictions. So the city's arguing, yeah, we took less money, but it was going to be easier in the long run.
Exactly. It's a $10 million differential, but the other bid would be a lot longer time frame. In fact, the Sterling Bay promised to close this calendar year, by December. So they're saying, this is going to be a much easier process. There are fewer contingencies. This is why we chose it. Nothing to see here, move along. So we'll see if the alderman gets some more green space out of this deal or exactly what the end game is.
There's a broadcast edict now across the country. I don't know if you're aware of this, but every program must deal with football in one way or another. Whether it's protest or wins and losses, I'm interested. And I was thinking of you when we learned yesterday that Whitney Young, a magnet school, was canceling the rest of its football season because of injury/academic eligibility. Niles North has suspended the rest of its season because of hazing. I know the Highland Park District eliminated tackle football. A number of schools are consolidating their teams because kids just aren't going out. Do you think in 10 or 15 years that we're going to have high school football?
Yeah, I've got three letters for you, CTE, you know, the helicopter parents of today. They see these stories that are very legitimate about the concussion damage that occurs, and they're pulling their kids out. They're making them play baseball instead, which, God bless. It's funny, it made, you know, made me think of this story. In my 40s now, I had not heard this story until I entered this decade of life. When I was a freshman in high school, I was a soccer player, 12 seasons. But as you know, I'm a pretty big guy. Apparently, the head football coach of my high school called my mom to recruit me. She told him to never call again and never tell me about it. And she only told me when I was in my 40s.
Is that right?
So she was ahead of the curve on worrying about safety on football.
Yeah, it's certainly going around, and we'll see what happens. All right, Frank Sennett.
That's why I'm so smart, Steve.
Because you weren't banging your head around.
Exactly.
I knew there had to be a reason. I know it wasn't studying. You can read more at chicagobusiness.com. Frank, great to talk to you. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here. How's your life insurance? We're going to talk about life insurance. I guess September is life insurance month because, well, 1 month has to be. Let's do it this month. We'll talk up to USAA about life insurance and whether or not you have enough coming up. Let's talk life insurance a little bit. Sean Scaturo is on a phone line. He is the Director of Life and Health Insurance at USAA. Sean, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the time.
I'm happy to talk to you. Now, are you in Texas, or where are you sitting today?
I am actually in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, nice. A hotter spot than Texas. Nice choice.
Yeah, I think we're actually catching a little bit of a break right now. It's not as hot as Texas, so I'm happy to say that.
Tell me a little bit, you know, because we see the USAA ads on TV, especially during football games. And as I understand it, it's an insurance company for former members of the military and their family. Did I get that right?
You did. Yeah, that's spot on. USAA was originally established in 1922 by military officers, and since then we've expanded our eligibility to our enlisted and now to families, and we aim to serve the military and their family community.
So what percentage of the insurance market in the country is eligible to work with you? I mean, I just wonder. I bet it's bigger than I would think.
Well, I mean, from a life insurance perspective, I'm glad to say 100% of the eligible market. With USAA, any individual, whether they have military affinity or not, can actually come to USAA and apply for life insurance.
Okay, and life insurance is what we're here to talk about, and the fact that we probably, most of us, don't have enough of it, right? 40% of us have no life insurance?
Yeah, that is the harrowing statistic, is that 40% of us are not insuring our families properly.
I'm going to ask you an unfair question, but when do we not need life insurance? I mean, let's say...
When do we not need it?
Yeah, let's say you're... Okay, I'm 54 years old. Let's say I had no kids. My wife and I, we have enough money to bury me. We have enough money, you know, to eventually retire. Do I still need life insurance?
You know, there's probably a case that someone could make for it, but I will say I've been a financial planner by trade and been in financial services for the past 15 years, and one thing I used to tell to all of my client members is that I hope that every one of my members gets to a point where they no longer need life insurance,
right,
stressing that word need, but they may want life insurance still. So when you think about your needs, you know, if you're, you know, still either working or you're nearing retirement, you've got no kids, your liabilities are now much lesser than they were when you're in your 20s and 30s, yeah, the case for having life insurance from a needs perspective is much smaller, but you may still want it. And where I think about retirees, we know that more retirees are entering retirement with ongoing credit card debt. They're entering with an existing mortgage. Life changes, you know, a late stage, you know, a later in life divorce can be a big reset button for a lot of folks. And life insurance starts to become more important to make certain that you don't run out of assets or that the people depending on you don't run out of assets during their life.
That's one of the keys.
We're starting to see a lot more of the need coming in later in life as well.
Okay, I was going to say that's one of the keys too, isn't it? If you have life insurance, is to continue to look at it because your life changes. You might be divorced or you might have kids or you might not have these expenses, so you got to stay on it. But in the time we have, we've changed in the way we work now. It used to be you'd go to work, you'd have a full-time job, you'd get life insurance, you'd get a pension from your job. A lot of us are working two or three different part-time jobs where life insurance isn't available. I would imagine that's been a big change in your market.
Yeah, it definitely has. With so many people predominantly relying on their employer to provide, you know, group life insurance coverage, seeing the kind of the quote unquote gig economy come in, whether you're an Uber driver or, you know, you, as you said, you have multiple part-time jobs, you may not have those benefits to rely on. You may not have access to that group life insurance. And even so, we know that those that are working full-time, many of them that do have full-time benefits, we're starting to see less and less of them have that group life right. coverage as their first staple. So the importance of going out and actually researching and taking, you know, the little bit of time needed to start answering some of these questions about what your financial life requires from making certain that you've got that right protection, it just becomes more and more important to actually take action on that and getting the right life insurance for your family.
Millennials are my favorite people in the world. How are they doing on this?
Unfortunately, not doing well.
No.
We know that statistically, they're just not carrying enough coverage. 65% of millennials are not carrying life insurance on themselves. And there's probably one thing to be said another about them. Like to your question about needs, we know millennials are getting married later. They're buying houses later. And so ultimately, their needs might not be
as early. Right.
Right. But, they're very cost sensitive as well. And we know competing dollars, they're looking at it from a perspective of, do I need it? Can I afford it? Do I understand the value of what it does for me today and what it will do for me in the future? And I think that's a lot of kind of head scratching questions that they're answering.
Hey, Sean, I'm late. And I know this might not be a question for you, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because it's in the news. USAA is a big sponsor of NFL football, and I'm reading stories about vets who are pressuring USAA to withdraw their support from NFL because of all this protest stuff that's going on. What's your read or what's your comment on that?
I really don't have a comment on it. I'll say, completely transparently, I don't even know enough about the subject matter to make an intelligent comment.
That's good. That's great protection. Keep it that way.
There we go.
Sean, it was great to talk to you. I appreciate you taking the time today.